Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Christopher Labuse. Christopher started the Storytime Project as a way to check in on fellow veterans and help prevent veteran suicide. So welcome to the show, Christopher. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, my name is Christopher Labuse. I'm a Sergeant First Class in the United States Army. I've been in about 13 years now, a little over 13 years. And about 2 years ago now, me and my wife founded the Storytime Project to prevent veteran suicide and be more proactive, because we realized there was enough of the awareness being brought, but less of the prevention. So we came up with Storytime after one of my soldiers, the sixth soldier to commit suicide that I've had in the 13 years, Justin Story, after he committed suicide. And we thought of the practice, and then it just kind of started taking off from there. So
unfortunately, you know, sometimes great things come from bad situations. And yeah. So, you know, I feel strange saying that this is a great thing, because, you know, ideally we wouldn't live in a world where things like this would be necessary, but we do. And so, you know, what you're doing, to help prevent veteran suicide, I think is a great thing. What was the idea behind the Storytime Project? Obviously, it came, you know, after there was, you know, this loss and everything. But what made you think that this was a good idea, and what kind of led it to where it is today?
So it started actually I had a medic my second deployment. And he joined the Army when he was like 17 years old, deployed when he was 18, and he ended up committing suicide when he was 21. And Doc Nieto was his name, and he was just an outstanding guy. And it hit me really hard. And I racked my brain, trying to figure out like how to prevent this and how to prevent veteran suicide. And I just couldn't come up with anything at the time. And then, because I did, like, it was ridiculous. Like, I did, the day I found out, the next day I did 22 pushups every hour on the hour for 24 hours. And it was like, this isn't going to bring them back. This isn't really preventing anything. And then, you know, years go on, and I myself actually ended up, after my fourth deployment, being admitted into a behavioral health hospital. And I was like terrified. I remember it was me and my ex-wife were having issues, because I just got back from the deployment, and we'd already been divorced at this time. And I kind of got back from the deployment, curled up into a little bottle. And one of my buddies, a really good friend, he was another squad leader with me. He picked up on the signs, realized what was going down, came over to my house, wouldn't leave me alone. And we went, he ended up calling the MPs. The MPs came over, and it was like one thing after the other. The next thing you know, I'm in a hospital, in the ER portion of the hospital on Fort Polk. And this major comes in, and she comes in, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, all right, Chris, man, you can bullshit your way out of this. You know, and then you can just go live your life, or, you know, keep in. Actually, there's one point I was actually thinking how I could escape. Like, all right, I can go outside and smoke, and then I can run, because I was so terrified of getting help. Because right. of the stigma behind it, you know, it's like, you know, they're like, oh, don't get help, don't show weakness, especially as a non-commissioned officer. You know, at this time I was a staff sergeant, and I was like, man, what am I gonna do? You know, like, I'm gonna lose all my street cred of being this, you know, this four-time deployed, like, pipe hitter, staff sergeant, you know, CIB and everything. And, you know, all these Joes looked up to me. And then this major comes in, and she's like, well, after, you know, reviewing and seeing what you said and seeing what your your peers have said that brought you in, we're going to send you to this behavior health hospital. And I'm like, the fuck you are. Like, the only time I ever got in the third, or at this time I was like 10 years, 8 years, something like that. The only time I ever got mouthy with an officer, especially a major. And I'm like, the fuck you are. Like, she was kind of snarky anyway, or she was kind of had an attitude. She's like, well, then we'll just get the MPs. And, you know, being an infantryman, and it's like, okay, ooh, an MP, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, well, bring the whole battalion. And, you know, I'm not a very tall dude at this time. We were pretty fresh from our last deployment. And so I had a little bit of lean muscle on me. I was pretty good. And I'm like, well, bring the whole battalion in, because I ain't going. And my platoon sergeant at the time comes in, who's a massive support system. And he comes in and he just has this dumbfounded look. And he looks at me and he's like, hey, LaBuse, you know, there's like about two squads worth of infantrymen out, or MPs outside the door talking about how they're going to tase you and drag you out of this thing. And I'm like, oh, shit. So he ended up kind of like talking me down. And it was, I remember out, like, I had tears rolling down my face and I was so terrified, man. Like, you know, they take, you know, they send guys like us to this, like exactly what I said was, they send guys like us to places like this and they just throw away the key. I thought I was never going to get out. I thought it was like, I was going to do a month there. And then they're like, all right, now you're getting chapped out of the Army. And I've done this job since I was 18 years old. Yeah, I really didn't know anything else. And so he ended up talking me off the ledge, so to speak. And we ended up going, and he's like, all right, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, tell him, you know, I tell him I'm on emergency leave. Tell my squad, because I was a weapons squad leader at the time. And he's like, what do you mean to tell the guys? And I'm like, tell him I went on emergency leave. That's what we'll tell him. That'll be the story, you know. And so we kind of cover this up a little bit. And he's like, okay, he was down with it. And I'm like, we're driving, and it was about an hour drive to the hospital. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, and it was really bad because my first sergeant, that was his first weekend. We just did change of responsibility. So that was his first weekend. And his first weekend, he has a staff sergeant going to the, you know, the mental hospital. So I text him, I'm like, yo, sorry for sergeant. Like, you know, and he's like, don't worry, man, shit happens. You know, just go get help. And then I was thinking about it on the hour drive. I'm like, you know what? Sergeant Reserve, who was my platoon sergeant, I'm like, tell the guys what happened. You know, tell them where I'm at. Be honest with them. And at that moment, I realized that non-commissioned officers, you know, we go off of be no do, you know, be that NCO, know what you're supposed to know and do what you're supposed to do, essentially. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to be that NCO. And at that moment, I'm like, all right, I'm just going to set the example. I'm going to set the standard for this. Like, I'm going to go get help, get my headspace and timing readjusted, you know, and I'm going to come back and I'm just going to be the same NCO that I did, but better. And that's exactly what I did. I went to the hospital, spent about 2.5 weeks maybe. And then after that, I got out, and a week later I was on platoon live fire controlling a weapons squad. And it was the best performance I believe I've ever had. And even the sergeant major, he's like, god damn, abuse, like, I'm gonna send you know, like, you just got back from behavioral health hospital and you come in here and you got your fire commands on point, you know, Atarac, all this stuff is just, you're shit hot, you're calling out targets, you're marking targets with your 320, and just pieces started falling into place. And I'm like, man, like, because I wasn't worried about this stuff, I had all the time in the world to think about this stuff. And it was also like the coolest platoon life I've ever been at, because I was so in tune with everything because I had nothing else on my mind. Uh-huh. And then, you know, it was just back to being me. I was still a weapons squad leader. I was still in the Army. And then Justin, I got the text from another squad leader that I PCS from Fort Polk, came to here to Camp Attlebury, where I'm going to, OCT for National Guard units. And I was out turkey hunting one morning and I got a text message from Austin, one of the other squad leaders in the company back in at Polk that I was with. And he's like, it said, Story killed himself last night. And I remember it because I was picking up the target, the decoys for turkey hunting. And I just opened it up, looked at it, and put it in my pocket real quick. Because I kind of read it, but I thought it said something completely different. It said, I thought I got a story for you. And I go pick up the targets. I go back to the truck. Me and my wife are sitting in the truck. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Austin texted me. I pull out my phone. And I see his, you know, story killed himself last night. And at that, and it's just like, shit stopped. And my wife's like, she told me my face went white. Because it was just like the last thing I've ever expected. Yeah. You know, that's how you always hear that. You know, it's the last thing. Right. Like I was talking to him yesterday because he's a big Packers fan. And I was born in Wisconsin, so I was a Packers fan. And I was just like, I was just talking to him the other day, talking shit, you know, just BSing about it on Snapchat. And so we got home, and because after I got out of the mental hospital, I stopped drinking. And when I got with my wife now, I've been sober for almost a year at this time when me and her got together. And so I didn't drink. And that was that normal coping mechanism, you know, like kind of like the whole bike, you know, like how the military kind of tries to emulate being a Viking. And it's like, right. If Vikings were so badass, they'd still be here. You know what I mean? You can't sustain that fight. And guys are just like, you know, I see on Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook and all these social media sites, it's like, oh, tell Valhalla story. You know, this shower beer is for you or this beer is for you. And it's like, I didn't, because I was sober and I didn't want to drink, because I'm man enough to admit that, like, I can't drink. I couldn't even go into a bar right now. You know what I mean? And I've been sober for 2 years. And I wasn't really like, I don't know if it's the right wording, but like forwarded that opportunity to go back into the bottle. Cause I'm like, you know what? Life's good right now. You know, me and my wife, we're married, we're happy. You know, this is amazing. I'm like, I'm not going to jeopardize that just to go into the bottle because of this. So I sat at the end of my bed, and once again, those pieces were just kind of falling into place. And I'm like, all right, you know, cause I started noting, you know, 13 years in, you start noticing things, like some crazy things, like some of the best NCOs and soldiers I've ever had were from broken homes, because they immediately latch onto that loyalty. And even in history, you know, Sergeant Audie Murphy, he came from a broken home, you know? So like, I just started noticing those things. And a lot of suicides happen after ETS and PCS. You know, you get these guys in and they come in and they're with that unit for anywhere between 3 to 5, you know, years roughly. And they build that bond, and then all of a sudden they get that bond stripped from them.
Right.
And then they PCS, and they might not know anybody there, or there might be a completely different culture there, you know, like especially going from like a light unit to a mechanized unit, or a light unit to a recruiting office, like what was in Story's case. And everybody, you just don't kind of jive with everybody as much, you know, as your old unit. And so you get that, you know, you're already like almost segregated from everybody. Mm-hmm. And what's like an easy mechanism? Oh, I'm gonna go drink. You know what I mean? And so and then you also kind of lose contact with them too. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I got, you're so engulfed with your life that you kind of forget all those brothers you had a few years ago. And you know, every now and then you see them on Facebook, and then you talk to them and everything. And then I'm like, all right, so that's one thing we have to stop, you know, to bring prevention. I want to prevent it. I don't want to bring awareness. I want to prevent. That's what I just kept thinking. And I'm like, all right, well, we do a radio check when we're on guards, you know, because every deployment I've been on a guard rotation or an SOG, you know, like on the cops or on the FOBs or whatever. And I'm like, well, we do a radio check to make sure these dudes are fucking good, not screwing around, you know, not sleeping. Right. So why don't we just do a radio check now? And I'm like, all right, 1800, you know, that's a good time. You know, people, it's in between, you know, dinner and bed roughly. Dinner's not, it's either before that or after. And everything's starting to wind down from the day. I'm like, all right, the 22nd of the month. All right, let's do the 22nd. Because that's in between pay periods. A lot of dudes are starting to get, you know, tight on money. And stressors are starting to come up. As well as, you know, obviously 22 for veteran suicide, it's an easy number to remember. Right. And then it was just like something took over my fingers when I was writing up this thing on Facebook underneath my status. And I also wanted to keep it away from being like military oriented, because what I've seen is just, you know, like with the job I have now being an OCT, you have to be able to know what you're talking about. you know, and that was a big thing. Like I did a bunch of research, and I'm like these guys need something else besides the military. You know, like with me, I joined the Army when I was 18, and this is all I've done for the last 13 years. I wouldn't know what else to do. And so I'm like, all right, I kind of want to keep it away from the military side, you know, because some dudes were like, oh, you should have called it radio check or something like that. I'm like, no. And also, as you know, like everything in the Army has to have a symbolism type, you know, even down to the colors on the flash and all this other crazy stuff. Everything has symbolism. So I wanted it to symbolize stuff, but I didn't think it was going to get as big as it's gotten now. So I wanted it to be called Storytime because it kind of, you know, goes together. And then for Justin. And it was so that way the guys from my company could see that they could see, you know, Justin's story, because that's all it was. Just set your alarm on your phone for 1800 on the 22nd, and then it goes off. You stop what you're doing, you see story time, and you're like, man, and it kind of hits that memory bank, and it's it brings those feelings back on how you felt when we lost them. And it's like, all right, I don't want to feel that way again, so I'm going to make this call, I'm going to reach out to a dude I haven't called in a while, you know, and it's like, awesome, you know, so that's how we'll set it up. And it also plays to just everyday people too. Cause like, I'm a realist, like suicide, no matter what, if you're military, an astronaut, you know what I mean? Anybody, it sucks. It's horrible. So it also plays along with the civilian aspect too. And then we started that up, and there's just a simple ideology. And about a month later, you know, next thing you know, my Facebook is just blowing up on the 22nd, and everybody's like, hey, it's story time, let's get on it, you know. And I'm like, all right, awesome, like this is pretty cool, man. And like, I'm one thing I used to get off of drinking so much is keep my hands busy, and so I got big into like woodworking and stuff like that. And I always wanted this, it's pretty funny because I just always wanted this Cricut machine. And my wife's like, all right, let's go get it. We went and got it, and I couldn't figure out what to make with it. You know, you just got this cool new toy, and you're like, oh, I don't even know what I want to do with it. So I just designed a sticker, and I posted on Facebook, and then next thing you know, my buddies are like, dude, how much you want for it? And I'm like, I can't really put a price on this, man. Like, it's all about the awareness. That's the thought process I've always had. It's always about the prevention of it, and this could be a reminder for guys. And so I'm like, just donations, you can Venmo me and I'll get it out to you. And for the next like week, me and my wife were up to like 2 o'clock in the morning making these stickers. And we got a good little chunk of change in. And my wife's like, all right, what are we going to do with this money? And I'm like, well, let me look into some organizations we could donate it to under Justin's name. And like, I looked into it and I was researching, and these guys, you know, 22% of every dollar was actually going to helping people, 5%, 6%, you know, the biggest one was like 35%, I think. And I looked into nonprofits, and how it works is that 95, I think it's like 95% of your profit has to go back in to helping people. And because these companies have so much overhead, you know, it's understandable. A company gets bigger, they have more overhead. And so like that number drops. And then I'm like, I don't know what to do. And then my wife, because COVID was big, we couldn't go anywhere for our honeymoon, stuff like that. She's like, well, let's just go all in. She's like, I'll set up the paperwork. I'll get the EIN number. I'll get the 501(c) numbers. I'll get all this paperwork done. And we can go, we'll put our honeymoon money into it and we'll be official. And I'm like, all right, well, how are we going to help people? You know, and once again, I was kind of like looking up for ideas, and I'm like, all right, well, what helped me when I got out of the hospital? Outdoor recreation and fitness. They're my two biggest go-tos. And I'm like, all right, that's what we'll do. We'll do outdoor, you know, we'll have a 4-pillar program. You know, the first pillar is just about story time, you know, reaching out to your buddies, being proactive. The second pillar will be community outreach. You know, talking, going on podcasts, talking to groups, talking to soldiers. Some of my buddies that are platoon sergeants now, they invite me down and I hang out and talk to their guys. And then we'll do like a workout or something. And then the last two will be physical fitness and the outdoors. And I was a realist, and I'm like, you know, those big elk hunting trips, like we just got back from an elk hunting trip, and that's why I only do one big trip a year, but we do a bunch of little trips. And because I prefer that yeah, I'd rather teach a man how to fish than fish for him. Because when he comes back from that elk hunt trip, he's still going to have all these problems. You know, yeah, right. I can give him advice and let him see what's going down. But I'd rather teach him that if he has a stressful day, how to go into the backyard, how to go to that hunt land and get out there, or how to shoot. And then I'm like, all right, well, we're going to gear more towards archery, because a lot of, you know, the basic rifle marksmanship falls into archery. But yeah, it's different because it's not a gun. You know, it gives them that sense of I'm something more than an infantryman in the army. You know, I'm also an archer. And then for physical fitness, we leaned hard on CrossFit, because that community is just, it's an amazing community, very nice community. And it, once again, it pulls them out of, I'm not just an infantryman, I'm not just in the army, I'm also a CrossFit athlete. And then that was, that's pretty much from start to finish, like how it started. It all just kind of rolled, and puzzle pieces fell in, and the support I had from my wife and stuff was just really cool. And me and my wife made a deal right off the bat, that we will never pay ourselves off of this, no matter how big we'll get. We'll never pay ourselves off of it. And whatever money we make goes right back into the account and right back out to help people. And because we're so personable, and, you know, I've been through the ringer, you know, I've done the deployments, I've gotten help with behavioral health. Like, I can relate to these dudes, and I'll sit down and, or I'll talk to them. And I'll be like we had one guy, he wasn't really into fitness because his back was all jacked up, didn't really do too much. And he was from the city, so he didn't really have, he didn't really see any potential in hunting. You know, he never done it, he never really had interest. So I stopped and I thought, and I'm like, all right, well, he said he liked coffee, so let's get him into roasting his own coffee beans. And we hooked him up with his own stuff. And then, because once again, it plays into that, that nitpicky that we get in the military, you know, that 45 degree angle. And like, I learned how to roast my own coffee, and it's a pain in the butt, man. Like, it's like land nav, dude. Like, if you're a little off, you screw the whole up. And it's good because we sent him the stuff. He learned how to roast his own coffee. Now he loves it. And because he has that product to show, like, hey, I'm not just, you know, a vet with a jacked up back. I also roast my own coffee. It gives him more. And then it also gives him that instant feedback of like, hey man, taste this coffee I just brewed today, you know, or just roasted today. Like, what do you think? And then he gets that enjoyment, and it also builds that community. And he can feel that he gives back when he, you know, makes coffee for the VA or whatever mm-hmm. it has been. So we really try to tailor to that guy, so it helps him. And it's just been awesome, man. That's how pretty much all started out, and when that went down, man. So
yeah, I mean, that's absolutely like an amazing story, you know, kind of the backstory with your personal situation, which was, you know, a difficult time in your life. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that you had leadership that you could count on, that were willing to, you know, cover things up a little bit. I, you know, maybe that's not the right mm-hmm. word, but they were willing, you know, your platoon sergeant was willing to, you know, help you save face, if you will, you know, mm-hmm. with your guys and everything. You know, and so I think having that level of comfort, because going into it, I think you're not a unique story here. I think a lot of people who are going into behavioral health, you know, kind of crises, they're worried about their careers and what other people are going to think of them and all that kind of stuff. And knowing that they have someone there who's going to, you know, cover for them and make it so that all of those worries can kind of just get pushed aside, and then they can focus on what they need to focus on, their mental health, is a super important thing to have. But I also like how your leadership, you know, you decided to, you know, lead by example and say, hey, look, I needed help. I'm not immune to this. And, you know, here we go. Now I'm going to go get the help that I need and take care of that. Because I think, you know, other people are going to follow that lead, you know, when they discover that, you know, oh, hey, you know, so-and-so, they did this and they turned out pretty damn good. So, okay, well, maybe I need some help too, and I'll go and get some help too. And so that, I think those two are super important points. And you mentioned those earlier, and I just wanted to circle back to those, because I think having that kind of leadership in any organization, and you alluded to this too, you know, this is not just limited to the military. You know, civilians can have this kind of problem as well. But it's super important to have that kind of leadership that's going to lead by example and also take care of their people, you know? Mm-hmm. So those are amazing. But yeah, so, you know, at 1800 on the 22nd of every month, I mean, it seems like a simple thing to do. Just pick up the phone and call someone you haven't talked to in a while, right?
That's the coolest thing about it, is because, like, yeah, we on our website, like, we have our t-shirts and stuff to fund our extracurriculars, you know, like the hunting and the CrossFit sponsoring guys and stuff like that. But it was so funny the other day. One of my buddies, he doesn't live too far away from me, and he's like, "Hey man, there's this guy, he owns this gun shop, and I told him about, you know, your nonprofit, and I kind of want you to meet him." And I'm like, "Okay, cool, man." And so we go down there, we go into the gun store. And he's like, immediately he stops me, because, like, you know, nowadays it's what drives me insane, because everybody's like, "Oh, support local vet or support better known businesses," and then they ask for free shit. And it's like, that's not supporting. Like, I love, you know, there's a million companies out there that I spend half my military paycheck on, because, like, one, I want, you know, to support their dreams, because I think it's like a fun hobby. It's like, yeah. Like, most of the stuff I own now is veteran-owned businesses. Like, and so I'll buy their stuff, and then I kind of tell them about story time, and then they're like, "Oh, awesome." But anyway, this guy, you can tell he's had a million people come in and ask them for, like, free ammo and stuff like that. And right as soon as they come in, you can see on his eyes, he's just like, "Oh, great. Like, another nonprofit wanting free shit." And I come in, and immediately, like, he puts his hand up like this, and he's like, "All right, dude, before we do any work together, like, I'm going to need, you know, some paperwork showing you're, like, official." And I'm like, "Oh yeah. Like, on my 501(c), you know, my EIN, you know, all." He's like, yeah. And I'm like, "Well," and I put my hand up, because I'm so passionate about this. It's really hard for me not to get defensive sometimes, especially, you know, and I put my hand up, just kind of mimic. I'm like, "Well, man, just so you understand, I don't need your fucking money." Like, and then I'm like, if you would have just let me explain how story time works. And I told him, and once I told him, like, his attitude just completely changed.
Right.
And that's the coolest thing, because I can be broke as shit and still preach the gospel. It's going to help the most people, you know, just calling, reaching out, checking on your buddies. And then also just me coming up and like talking with you, like a cell phone bill that I had to pay anywhere, right? You know, and letting people know that's like, so I've been in the Army 13 years, right? It took me 8 years being in the Army to go to behavioral health. And then it took me another 2 years on top of that to kick the bottle. So a total of 10 years. And because I've been roughly, like, I just broke 13. And since those 3 years, I've done, and this is after going to the behavioral health hospital, when I was supposed to be kicked out, you know, and my career is supposed to be over, I've gone to SLC. I've gotten promoted to Sergeant First Class. I got my EIB. It took me 7 times to get my EIB, man. And it was rough.
And
once I got it, it was once I had a clear headspace, I got it. Last year I took 4th in Best Warrior in Corps level, and I just got inducted into the Sergeant Arnie Murphy Club actually at the beginning of this month. And it's like, man, like, I love it. Like, I'm just like, yeah, dude, you want to call that kid weak? Come and call me weak. Like, I love calling dudes out on that, because it's like, it's not weakness,
right?
It's like, I checked the oil in my car. Is that the car being weak? No, sometimes you just need outside help and you need to get the internals fixed. And
exactly.
And it's one of those things that it's just so simple and we overlooked for such a long time. And that's also the other thing is, like, the way, you know, not, I don't like the 22 pushups was amazing. It brought awareness and all that, but it almost at the end. And also you can see it with that. Remember that ice bucket ALS challenge?
Yep.
Like, yeah. That didn't raise very much money, but everybody knew about it because they wanted to pour ice on their head. And then the 22 pushups, it's like people would videotape themselves doing these pushups and then post it online. And it's like, I'm doing, you know, my name's Christopher LeBuse. I'm doing 22 pushups for 22 days for veteran suicide awareness. And you knock them out. And then my boss, like, I remember one day we were just looking, he's like, why is this dude doing something we're really good at, like push-ups, to bring awareness to something we're really bad at? You know?
And that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And it almost felt like another, it kind of felt like that dude, he's kind of like a pain in the butt or a complete piece of crap, like Monday through Saturday, but he puts that $20 in the offering plate, or he does that one good deed that week, and he is just a saint and his conscience is clear. That's what it kind of felt like. Or also, like, I'm pretty sure you get it too. Like, when you go into, you know, Walmart, when you're in uniform, just try to pick up milk on the way home. Like, this happened the other day. And then this lady, like, my wife's in a crutches right now, because she tore her ACL, and I'm pushing the cart, and like, this lady like cuts my wife off, comes in front of me, and she's like, because I was in uniform, and she's just like, oh, thank you for your service. And, you know, always in the back of your head, you're like, is that what you mean it? Or is that what you were kind of trained to do? Like, you think it's the right answer to do?
It's like a reflex. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what, like, that stuff kind of felt like. And I seen, like, also with the suicide, it was it was also like a circle too. You know, the guy would commit, they'd have a soldier in the unit commit suicide, and then he would go, and then the unit would be really close for about 3 months. And then it just, you know, and there's always the same face, you know, 6 suicides since I've been in, and it's always been the same Facebook message on there. And it was just this cheesy message about, like, all right, hey, everybody fall in. All right, listen up, fuckers. If you need anything, you can reach out to me. And, you know, it goes on. And I'm like, we're all stubborn. Like, that was one thing that kind of kicked me in the butt too. It's like, we're all stubborn assholes. Like, you know, like, it was almost like on like Monty Python, where that dude's the knight's hopping around. It's like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. Yeah. I'm still going to get you. And he has, like, no legs. And it's like, that's how stubborn we are. So we have to reach out. No, man, I'm going to reach out to you. And I'm going to be proactive, because once the unit started piddling off, that tightness right after the suicide, next thing you know, there was another suicide. And then it goes back, same text message or same message, you know, everybody's close again. And then that's why I figured we needed, like, a once a month thing. I had no crap set date and time. And that's why we have the reminders. And because that almost essentially will break that cycle. It keeps that unit together, even though they PCS. And then you just kind of, like, BS with it. Cause, like, there's two dudes. One dude I did my third deployment with, and then another dude I did my first deployment with. So 13 years ago, cause I deployed 10 or 11 years ago now. I did my first deployment with, he lived 15 minutes away from me. I didn't even know. And then with story time, it kind of, you know, it brought that back. And he's like, dude, I live in Greenwood. I'm like, no way, you live in Greenwood, dude. I live right down the road. And then, so it's just the crazy stuff that happens.
Yeah.
And so that was, it's just insane how it all worked out, man. And it was always right in front of us the whole time. And we just kept overlooking. I think it's because it was so simple. You know,
it is. And yeah. I mean, just being able to reach out and talk to somebody and having that connection is just so easy to do. And like you said, I think we don't think about that because it is such an easy solution to a problem. You know, after one of the suicides from one of the guys that I served with, the platoon sergeant that we served with in Afghanistan, he set up a group chat on Facebook, and he added all of the guys who were in our platoon when we were in Afghanistan. And he's like, look, we got to be here for each other. And so, you know, and we usually use the group just to, you know, just shoot the shit and, you know, screw around and everything. But every once in a while, someone's got a problem. They need help. And so, like, they drop a message in there, and they're like, okay, well, we got you. We're going to do what we can to help you. And some of us, you know, I got out years ago, and, you know, I live on the other side of the country for most of these guys now, but we still can stay in communication by using this group. And it's just a really great way to have that communication. So, you know, if someone doesn't want to talk on the phone necessarily, they can still send a message, you know, and still have that communication. I think that's the most important thing, is just kind of staying connected and everything like that, and making it an easy way to do. And I think that's just another way to do it. You know, you know, picking up the phone, calling someone, that doesn't hurt either. You know, what, like that's just a great way to do things, you know? And when I started this podcast, it was after I had known personally several people who had taken their lives, and, you know, that I served with them at one point or another, throughout my time in the Army. But, the thing is, kind of like you, I didn't want to just sit around doing nothing, waiting for another phone call or a text message or something saying someone else took their lives. So, you know, I wanted to share stories of people like yourself, like the story that you told, and, you know, your story of going to mental health and getting the treatment that you needed, and then coming back even better off than you were before. You know, like sharing stories like that, I think that's what people need to hear. And you need to know that it's okay to go and get help. And some people like yourself, even and myself and a lot of other people, you know, we didn't want to go get help. I lied through my teeth when I first came back from Afghanistan, you know, with all the screenings and everything that they did. I was like, I just want to get back home to my family. Like, just leave me alone with this crap. I'll deal with it later and I'll be fine. But I wasn't fine. And I needed the help, but, I was too stubborn to see it on my own. And so, you know, I eventually did get help, and, you know, I was better off for it, you know? But the thing is, you know, like with this podcast is I want to make sure that people know that they're not alone, you know, even though they may feel like they're alone, like they're the only one in the world who's ever struggled with whatever, or, you know, whatever the case may be, I want to make sure that they know that there are other people out there. Sometimes knowing that someone else has gone through a similar situation and come out better off for it is all you really need to know. And that there are resources out there to help them get through their tough times. You know, things like, you know, hunting trips, or, you know, outdoor recreation, CrossFit, you know, all those kind of resources that are available. Mm-hmm. And they aren't necessarily the things that you're going to get when you go to the VA. You know, and some people don't want to go to the VA or can't go to the VA for one reason or another. Fine. There's hundreds of other options out there for you. And things like what you're doing are, you know, just great examples of the stuff that's out there. And so I wanted to make sure that we got to highlight some of that stuff, you know, on this show, so that people know, like, you know what, there are things that I can do with, you know, maybe I haven't tried everything yet.
Yeah. Like I don't have like a crazy degree or anything like that. Like I have MRT and that's pretty much about it. And, but it's like, I remember when I was in the hospital, one was like this really old dude and this slightly larger old lady. And those were like the two counselors I would see like almost every other day. And one of them would be like, it would drive me insane because one would try to, take some of the one didn't know what I was going through, and she completely admitted it. And she's like, yeah, I have no idea what you're going through. Like, I've never been in that situation. I don't know how to like help you. And I'm like, all right, cool. Wrote her off. And then, the other one was like, he would try to relate like stubbing your toe to the shrapnel I have in my side. You know, he's like, yeah. Like, I remember like, you know, I woke up and we had our little meeting and I'm like, yeah, like, you know, when this weather changes, I can feel the rod in my knee. And he's like, oh yeah. Like I broke my toe once. And I'm like, dude, what the fuck? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, no. So that's why that was another thing that led me to like staying connected, because Doc Nieto, he was a gangster, and we got hit by a VBID, and the medic that we were, because we were supporting an RCP, that medic froze, and this dude, you know, this little kid, his A-bag was half his size, and he was just like a dog wanting to get out of the striker, and he takes off out of the striker after the platoon sergeant says it's good. We have our security in place, and he helps this kid. He ends up saving these three dudes' lives. And it was amazing. Like how he did it. Like I thought he was a magician. He had this gauze coming out of everywhere. And like some were pretty crazy wounds. Like dude had shrapnel on his neck. Another dude, the piece of the engine block, I took off half his hip. And, you know, like crazy bad injuries. And, but he got them all in the bird within the golden hour, and all three of them survived. And I gave him a lot of praise for that. But weeks after that, he always would come and wake me up, and he would be like, "Hey, I need to talk to you." And because you'd relieve that moment, you know, he was 18 when that went down. And I kind of, that's where I kind of shared my experience. That's where I kind of really started sharing my experiences with him. Because after my first deployment, craziest thing, I couldn't take the laundry out of my washing machine and put it into the dryer, just because that texture of the wet clothes kind of just brought shit back for me. And I'm like, I couldn't do it. And I shared that experience with him. And then that's when it realized, like, that's another thing when I realized, is like, you got to set that example. And, you know, getting mental help doesn't mean you're weak. Like, I have it all over my house where it's like, it's okay not to be okay. And it's true, because nobody, like the Vikings, kind of how, you know, they were all, you know, they're battle hardened and all that stuff. You can't maintain that lifestyle 365 days a year. Back in 2009, or 2010, it was after my first deployment, the Army came out with this manual, this book, and it was actually really good because it explained how you can't be military 24/7. You know, you have to be a person some days. And then just from my other experiences, I've learned is like, the Joes need to see that, hey, I'm Chris. I have two boys at home. I have a new daughter. You know, I'm married. Not just, oh, this is Sergeant First Class abuse, you know, because they can, once they see that I'm a real person too, and I have those real, you know, I have shit days, I have good days and stuff like that. Then, and they see, you know, cause like, I'm pretty sure now you could probably tell that like a CIB or even a combat patch in the Army is very far, becoming very few and far between on infantrymen now. When back when I joined, everybody had one,
right? You know?
And now it's like, they see that, and then you automatically get put on that like God status. And then they'll have a bad day with their wife or whatever, and you can just be like, yo man, like, it happens to all of us, dude, and this is how it works. Like, this is how you can get it better. And you just got to be, you got to be real with them. And then once they see, oh, he's supposed to be this amazing pipe hitter that's all, you know, done this cool shit, and I'm just me, so I can get this fixed too, you know. And then the other bad thing that the Army has real trouble doing is comparing one another, us comparing ourselves to each other.
Yeah.
Like, with PTSD, it's like, you know, hey man, if that's what you know makes you tick, that's what makes you tick. I'm not gonna judge you, and nobody else should, because, you know, to me it was, I couldn't change my washing machine out. You know, to somebody else, you know, you always hear that, like, people, like, I've had buddies that would refuse to drive past Burger King, you know, because that smell. And, you know, whatever happened, you know, like, because I used to kind of shrug it off after my second point, because I was a dick. I would see dudes at WTU that, oh, I got mortared 21 times in one night. And it's like, dude, I used to get mortared, and I would go outside and smoke. And then, oh, it's done, go back into my room. I go back into the beehive. But if that affected him, you know, you shouldn't compare yourselves to other people. And because it affects everybody differently. You know, a mortar round can drive that dude insane. Or a mortar round could be perfectly something, you know, whatever to me. And that's what prevents dudes from getting help a lot too. And that's what I make sure I preach a lot too. Like, hey, if it affects you, man, that's on you. Like, nobody can judge you for that. Because I was the same way. It was like, oh, I'm not, you know, yeah, I've done a lot of shit, but I mean, I'm not in bat. I'm not in group, you know? And so I shouldn't need this, because I haven't done any of this crazy stuff. But in reality, and what I found out from talking to other people, is like, some of the stuff I've done has been really insane from outside looking in. Like, you know, 2009, I was in Afghanistan, and they're like, oh, you were in the surge? And I'm like, I guess, man. Like, I was a private. I was there. Like, shit, I don't know. And so it's the basics. Like, that's the worst part about the Army. It's like how we try to compare ourselves to one another. Right. And that's the biggest thing that needs to stop, along with something we need to start, is that communication.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's really helped me in all the crap that I've gone through and that's happened. It's really nice, because it's like, you know, like, I'm happy my ex-wife decided to leave me while I was deployed, because that makes me a better non-commissioned officer. Because I know when that private and we're on rotation or his wife leaves, I know that I can help him, because I've been through that and he can relate and he can see that it does get better. Right. You know, like, it's not, you know, like that old Crow movie, you know, can't rain all the time. you know, that he can see that and it does get better. Cause that's what's they downward spiral think so bad. That's like, no, man, it gets better. Like, yeah, I was there, dude. Like, I got the divorce papers and I'm like, oh shit, I'm never going to see my kids again. I'm going to, you know, I just downward spiral thought and it was horrible. And I curled up into a bottle to hide from it. And now it's like, man, I have an awesome relationship with my two boys. And you know, I'm remarried and happily remarried, sober for 2 years. It's like, it does get better. It's just, you got to put that work into it and you got to have that honest grind. And sometimes, you know, people don't want to do that, but when they see that they have to do that, it'll push them a little bit farther, you know, and it's been nice because it really feels like all that crap that I've done and gone through, it's like, it really pays off because I can help other people now. And, you know, just talking with people, and it's just been an awesome experience, man.
Yeah, for sure. And going through, sometimes you have to go through those hard times mm-hmm. to really understand, like, and appreciate the good times. And mm-hmm. When you've gone through stuff like you've gone through, and realize that there is, you know, a better future ahead of you, you know, it gives you that hope. And so that way, you know, life is full of, you know, hard times. You know, we're always mm-hmm. going to have hard times, you know, loss of a loved one or, you know, relationship change or, you know, something is going to happen. And, you know, now you know that you can deal with that and you can come out better off on the other side of whatever that situation is. And so that's a powerful thing to take with you and keep with you for, you know, the rest of your life, but also to impart on other people, the privates and everyone else who are, you know, they're just starting their adult lives, maybe, you know, mm-hmm. and they haven't really, you know, maybe they didn't grow up in a broken home or whatever. And they didn't really have any adversities, you know, growing up, but you know, now they all of a sudden are going to be faced with something like that. And, you know, they're going to need some mentorship and some leadership and get them through that. So, so I think all of that is really, really great stuff, really great, inspiring kind of motivational stuff to be talking about. And I really commend you for, you know, what you're doing and, you know, applaud the efforts of what you're doing, because you're right. It's more than just awareness. It's about actual mm-hmm. prevention and doing something to prevent these things from happening is super important. And, you know, so it's been a pleasure speaking with you today, learning about, you know, Storytime Project and everything that you've been doing and your background and your story. I think it's really a great inspirational kind of story for people to listen to and take away some good advice from. Where can people go to help support the Storytime Project? And I know you mentioned like stickers and, mm-hmm. and things like that, but where can they go to support it and follow everything that you're doing?
So we have a website. It's www.thestorytimeproject.com storytimeproject.com. And then we have our Facebook, or not, sorry, excuse me, our Instagram and our Facebook, and it's just storytimeproject_0520.
Okay. So I will have links to all of those in the show notes for anyone who's listening, who wants to go check it out and get involved and support the project. What about people who are looking to get help, you know, through some of these trips or things, other things that you do? Can they go to the website as well?
Or yeah, they can. Yes. If they know anybody or if they themselves need help or any situation like that, they can send us a message through the website or on the Facebook or on the Instagram, because that's the other big thing is like a lot of people were terrified. I talked to a buddy, like that suicide prevention hotline, like a lot of those dudes, all they do is they just call the police and have them immediately show up. And that adds that other fear factor in. So if they could talk to somebody that's been through it. And then like, I talk to dudes every other day, almost where a guy like, you know, and like I said, like, I'm just like a realist. So that the website, they can email or message us through, and that's connected directly to me. And then the same thing with the Instagram page and the Facebook page, both connected straight to me.
Wonderful. So I will have, again, all the links to the website, social media in the show notes for this episode. Please reach out if you are struggling with anything and you need help. Reach out. It's you know, the right thing to do. You don't want to make any permanent decisions and mm-hmm. make the wrong decision there. So definitely reach out. There's definitely a better future ahead out there for all of us. So thank you again, Christopher, for joining
me. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah. And keep doing what you're doing, because I think it's really important work, and you know, it's really going to help improve some lives.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.